or of Lake Effect Now, I'm Mitch Teich. For those of you who just can't get enough of Lake Effect wine contributor Ray Pfister on this program, you can always hear him interviewing some of the country's top winemakers on his podcast, Life Between the Vines. Pfister just celebrated the podcast's 100th episode, and he came to the Lake Effect studios to celebrate the milestone and pop the proverbial cork. Pfister tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce about how the podcast and his own appreciation for the wine industry have evolved.
I don't drink wine the same way. I don't see it the same way. Now that I know what these people go through, what they deal with, from Mother Nature to what could happen in the cellar, I have such different appreciation for it. For me, I've learned the fine art of making wine, how everybody has their own technique, yet they're all doing the same thing, and how each one of them has this incredible passion. Again, for people to understand that during harvest, which is going on now, these people are doing 15, 17-hour days, 7 days a week. There's no break. They cram lunch in when they can, and they're taking care of their babies. And that'll continue on for a while because you get the whites first, then the reds, then the late harvest. It's continual work, and it's fast, and it moves along at a crazy pace.
Now, you've gotten to interview so many different winemakers over the years. What have been some of your favorite stories that you've heard?
I think it's more just hearing them tell them than it is picking out one individual story. Meeting Mike Gergich of Gergich Hills, and Mike Gergich made the Chardonnay that's well known from the movie Bottle Shock, and which won the Tasting of Paris in 1976. Such a great guy. He just turned 90 this year, and he's still kicking, and he's still out there in the cellar. You know, and, meeting him was a true honor. Meeting Carissa Mondavi, Robert Mondavi's granddaughter, who is just a beautiful, very, very nice woman, great to talk to, and her dad, Tim, just to be around the Mondavi family. I mean, they are the rock stars of the wine business. But yet meeting a lot of these smaller winemakers, Amy Aiken, and now her husband Joel, who has his own label, which is called Aiken. I just saw in a new issue of Wine Spectator, Karen Cakebread's Pinot Noir got very high rating, and it's like your friend. It's really quite a thrill to talk to these people and see what they put into this.
What trends have you seen as you've done these 100 podcasts?
You know, wines come and go. Malbec has had a major, has become somewhat of a fashionable wine over the last couple of years. And it's great, too, because people are knowing they can buy it fairly inexpensively. Argentinian wine is great wine. That's come along nicely. Ever since Sideways, Pinot Noir has kind of been king. And if you talk to any winemaker, they would say that it belongs in that chair because Pinot is considered the most complex, amazing wine that people can drink. Everybody has their own opinion, but Pinot is sort of reigning right now. Zinfandel's kind of making a comeback. People are starting to pay attention to this very complex and difficult to grow grape. So there are these trends and then mini trends. I think one of the things I've learned personally is I've learned to open my mind, and I always tell people, now, don't be close-minded about anything. I've never drank sparkling wine, champagne, if you will. Never had an interest in it. In the last 2 years, whenever I have friends over, I start with sparkling wine. There's a couple of labels I love. I will crack open right away. I go to a rosé if I can because I want to start light and then go into my Cabernet or to my Petite Sirah or whatever. I think that's the thing is try, learn.
What are some of the things you've heard from fans listening to the podcast over the years? How have their questions and feedback changed?
I don't think anything's really changed. They're just more curious about, well, can you, we'd like to see more stories from Australia. We'd like to see some more from Italy, that kind of thing. We just got an invitation from a chateau in France to come see them, which, of course, I'd love to do. So we're seeing more of that kind of thing going on.
Do you see then that maybe wine is becoming a little more egalitarian, if you will, that it's not quite so elitist as many people used to think that it was with the, you know, let me try to find the notes of nut and whatever.
I think it is becoming more for the common man, the common person. There'll always be an elite section of wine. Those are the people who go to the auctions and try and buy the fine bottles. Even that's getting a little funny now because there's been issues with fraud. So people are being much more careful about how they buy. But I see all kinds of people in the store, in the wine stores I go to, buying everybody. I mean, tall, fat, short, you know, different colors. I mean, it's just because they're looking for something interesting and different. And maybe they want to turn their friend on to it when they try it, going, hey, this is pretty good.
So how are you celebrating the 100th podcast?
I'm going to crack a bottle of wine.
Well, what about the podcast itself? What will we hear?
What we're going to do is, for the last couple of years, I've been accruing a collection of what I call words of the winemakers, and you and I have talked about this in the past, where, you know, you can't slug a dead cat, if you will, and not hit a glossary of wine online or in a book or whatever. And those glossaries tend to be very textbookish and kind of boring. So my thought was, I'm just going to ask a winemaker, tell me your definition of terroir. Tell me your definition of clone, or just the varietal itself, Cabernet Sauvignon. What, you know, how would you define that? So that's what we've done. There's 21 winemakers from Napa, Sonoma, Santa Barbara County, San Jose, from Italy, from Wisconsin, and from Oregon, giving us their definition of all of these wine words. And it's fun because some of them are words you wouldn't expect, and some, of course, are very common words.
Well, we have a little sampling here. What's a surprising word that you're going to feature today?
I don't know if it's a surprising word, but it's my favorite. It's the lees or surlees, which is basically the sediment you'll find in a Chardonnay barrel that winemakers will stir into the wine as it ages. And having done that myself, it's kind of cool. It's especially cool to see it when the wine has settled in a larger tank and how they use that to help age the wine and give it different notes. And that definition is given to us by Brooks Pater of Castello di Amoroso, which is a castle, if you will, in Napa Valley, a genuine castle. It's pretty cool. He's a neat guy.
Surlees is the French phrase for meaning aging the wine on those solids and on those lees. Generally, as I said, it's composed of dead yeast cells. And as the wine remains in contact for a period of time on the lees, those yeast cells, as they age and start to decompose, they actually release various compounds into the wine, specifically some things called mannoproteins. And this will change the texture and the mouthfeel of the wine. It will add more volume.
So that was the definition of surlees. What about native fermentation? Who will define this for us?
That would be defined by Craig Hazarow. Craig is the owner, or co-owner, I should say, of Sojourn Cellars, located just off the square in Sonoma. A really great guy, fun interview, and listen to his voice. I think he sounds like Jeff Bridges.
So in the winemaking process, we are effectively taking grapes that are about 25% sugar, and we are going to take those grapes and make them 0% sugar. And in the process of the fermentation, the alcohol, sugar is going to get converted to alcohol, and the alcohol is going to go from about 0 to about 14%.
That, again, was the definition of native fermentation, explained by Craig Hazarow. Where does a word like biodynamic come in, which is another word that we're going to hear defined today? It seems like it's referring to sustainability, environmental practices here.
It goes a little beyond that because it's almost it's a practice. It's almost to a degree of faith. There are some pretty strange parts to it if you read up on it, and some of the wine folks out there knowing what I'm talking about, where you do some funny sort of things, a little bit like burying something in the ground. And it's really interesting. But what it really comes down to is being sustainable. Many winemakers have this idea of that they're just guardians of the land for now. Eventually, someone else is going to come along and going to have to take that land after them and take care of it. And the idea is to sort of look forward and always be good to the land, not to use pesticides, to use natural ways of growing the grapes. I mean, as an example, and I'm not sure how accurate I'm being here, I remember one winemaker was talking about having, you know, their natural beetles in a typical vineyard that's just overgrowing. They don't go in and cut the overgrowth anymore. They let it grow. So beetles get in there. Well, beetles are bad for the vines, but they bring in native spiders, and the spiders eat the beetles. And it just kind of goes through the whole chain of life. But it goes beyond that with biodynamics. It's also about the water used on the property. The woman who gives us the definition is Lynn Grace of Wiseacre Vineyard. And Lynn's amazing, and her husband is an expert on biodynamics. Their property is a half acre. There's not much to it, but they're really focused on living off the land. They are true farmers. They have goats there. They raise everything themselves and pretty much live off their own land. So they're really the truest of farmers, I guess you'd say. But they believe in this idea of taking care of this land. So when they're finished, someone else will come along and they'll get good land to work with.
It would be, in a nutshell, harnessing the energy of your particular piece of property or enhancing that energy, bringing it together, farming with intent. If you are farming biodynamically and organically, if you're farming that way, you're going to produce a better grape because There is so much intention involved.
So, Ray, our final word is, you always give one that I cannot pronounce. I'm going to try it here. Vinifera?
Yeah, exactly. Vinifera. It's basically the grapes that came from France that started it all. Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Chardonnay, that sort of thing. Steve will tell you what the actual word is. It's a phrase, a textbook Latin definition. But that is what they are classified as. Those are what their actual name is as a plant.
It's really what is known as the European both wine grapes and table grapes, actually. So certainly if you think of anything planted in Europe or California, Oregon, Washington, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, all of those grapes are vinifera.
Well, that was vinifera, as it defined by Steve Fennell of Sanford Winery. Well, Ray, what's next for Life Between the Vines?
I like to think as much diversity as we can possibly do. Coming up now, though, will be Tony Turlato, who we interviewed a few years ago, and he is the president of Turlato Wines International, which is a giant company that owns several wineries. And although we try and stay away from companies that get too big, what I like about Tony is that he lets these wineries that he works with be autonomous. They do their own thing. And these winemakers are left to be creative and to really, make the best out of what they do. So Tony's always a fun interview. Plus, I was lucky enough to be invited to join them for lunch. And this is at the old Armor Mansion in Lake Bluff. So it wasn't too bad of a day. On top of that, we have an interview coming from a winery called 10 Acre, which I'm looking forward to. Very, very small place over in Sonoma. But I want to get some more French, Italian. I'd like to get some folks from Georgia because of their history of 8,000 years of winemaking there. So I really want to explore these other areas as well as Australia and some of the lesser known areas of the United States. I want to get to Virginia. Part of it is we need to remove some of our prejudices of thinking that certain areas create the best wines. If you go to a wine tasting in, Georgia, it's going to be about the people you're with and the fun you have. It may not be, Mouton Rothschild, but it's going to be probably good, and you're probably going to have a good time. And remember that.
Ray Pfister, thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Our wine contributor, Ray Pfister, runs the wine blog and podcast Life Between the Vines, where you can hear his recent 100th podcast episode. Pfister also owns Fifth Floor Recording in Milwaukee's Third Ward, and he spoke with Stephanie Lecce. Just in time for the World Series, a Milwaukee writer profiles 50 Red Sox fans from around the country, 51 if you include himself. We'll meet Greg Pearson when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.